If you went to school when I did, you'll know all about the slave trade. In the 18th century, 12 million Africans were shipped across the Atlantic to work in the plantations, but slavery was abolished in 1807, and the rest was history. Job done. So you might be surprised to hear that modern slavery is in alarmingly good shape today. It's a global issue. It's estimated that currently over 40 million people are enslaved, and it's big business. This high reward, low risk enterprise is worth about $150 billion a year. And it doesn't just happen elsewhere. It goes on here too, in our cities, in our towns, in plain sight, under our noses. It's estimated there are more than 130,000 victims in the UK, and there are currently 1,500 criminal investigations taking place. Hello and welcome to the third podcast made by the MedEye Trust. You may never have heard of us, but we're a very practical charity which has been providing safe houses for the victims of modern slavery in the UK for the last 12 years. If you're already MedEye supporters, then thank you. We value your support. If you're new to MedEye, then thank you for your interest and please stay with us to hear firsthand about the state of modern slavery in the UK today. In this podcast, we're going to hear about life in the safe houses where the victims of modern slavery are given refuge after escaping the control of their traffickers. My name is Liz Andrew, and I've been involved in the work of MedEye for several years. In the next half hour, I'll be talking with Katie Hallam and Hannah Spittle, who are both senior caseworkers with MedEye. Hannah works with male victims of modern slavery in the north of England, and Katie works in the south with female victims, many of them young mothers with babies or toddlers. But before we speak to Katie and Hannah, we're going to hear the third in our series of short dramatic monologues written by Alison Porter from the University of Warwick. Land of Eagles tells the story of human trafficking from five different points of view. Previously, we heard about Melinda, a victim of modern slavery from northern Albania, and about Yetmir, her boyfriend trafficker. This week, we're going to hear from Joe, who works in the MedEye safe house, where Melinda arrives after fleeing her traffickers.
The first time I saw Marlinda, she was just lying there on the floor, like a sack of potatoes. She couldn't even look at me, couldn't hold her head up, completely collapsed. She wouldn't listen to anything I said. I've been working at this safe house for about 18 months now, and this was definitely the worst case I've seen. Sometimes people ask me how I can do it, but I love my job. It's rewarding in other ways. This is how they are sometimes, with only the clothes on their back. I thought, how am I going to help her? But we got there. It takes time to gain their trust. They don't trust our police. Well, their police are different to ours. They feel alone. So we are a bit of everything to them. English teacher, driver, counsellor, midwife, solicitor. They've been fed cigarettes, alcohol and drugs and given out-of-date food to eat. They've been beaten and raped. It's not surprising they're suspicious. The canon? I haven't heard of that, but it's hard to talk about anything except the basics when they can't speak much English. We have so many nationalities here. It's hard to keep up with all the cultures and religions, but we do our best. I think it's the Albanians who nod when they mean no, which doesn't help. I've heard the same story so many times. Girls tricked by a man who is not what he seems and sold to brothel owners, then trafficked to the UK. It's heartbreaking. Marlinda came with another girl in the back of a furniture lorry. The other girl was thrown about so much she was sick. When the lorry stopped, they kept banging on the sides until the driver opened the doors. And Malinda just jumped out and ran. Ran. No shoes, nothing. No passport, nothing. Just her jeans and a t-shirt, that's it. She ran and walked for over 2 hours in the rain from the motorway services to a town, not even knowing which country she was in. Luckily, a woman in a charity shop saw her and took her to the police station. The police contacted the Salvation Army and now she's here with us.
Take a seat, Malinda. I'll just set up this interpreting app so we can talk.
Machine interpreting, powered by AI, is an efficient solution which provides both high quality and quick gist translations for over 60 languages through telephone interpreting.
Speak clearly into the phone, Malinda.
Kuyam.
Where are you? You're in a safe house in England.
Nga policia jeni. Apo te imigracionit.
No, we're not the police or immigration. You're in a refuge, a house where you can be safe. I'm your caseworker, Joe.
Kupu me mbane.
No one is keeping you anywhere. You can leave whenever you like, but you are completely safe here. We'll help you with things like getting some food and clothes, medicine if you need it, and we'll help you find a place to stay.
My guests today are Katie Hallam and Hannah Spittle, who, like Joe in the monologue, are senior caseworkers in MedEye Safe Houses. Katie, you work in a house which supports mainly young women. Did this story sound familiar?
Yes, very familiar. We do have predominantly Albanian women that actually arrive to our safe house with very similar stories. A lot of these ladies are trafficked and they are exploited into sexual exploitation. And, you know, when they come to us, they have a real lack of confidence and they're just really broken. They struggle to give eye contact, rarely have any belongings with them. So we help signpost them to different places in the community, able to help them register with GPs and access midwifery services if possible, because a lot of the girls are pregnant or they already have a baby when they arrive. So yeah, we play a huge part in helping them access all the services that they need. And in the time that they're with us, obviously they just keep growing in independence. And by the time they move on, they are literally a different person to when they first walked in.
So you work in two very different houses, Hannah and Katie. Can you paint a picture of your particular house?
So in our one, as it's just a male safe house, we work with males from different nationalities and different age ranges. Our youngest at the minute is 19 and our oldest is 63. Following on really from what Katie said, when the clients do arrive, they are really withdrawn. They might not wish to disclose much to staff at the beginning. They could have drug or alcohol issues because the traffickers use this as a type of payment rather than paying them. They've got a whole range of mental health issues. And there's a whole range of different areas that, you know, they do need support with.
Can you tell us about the atmosphere in the house?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have two male safe houses up north that we manage. One of the houses is more of our lower needs one. So we have got quite predominantly Vietnamese at that house. And it's great because they've got such a sense of community. They, you know, they cook together, they shop together. They seem to be from all over Vietnam and they do seem to be close. And it is a lovely feel at that house. One of my clients actually says he classes the people here as his family. So that's lovely.
And your other house, the other male house?
So that's our more higher needs. We do have those that need more 24-hour support there. We do have little groups that certain nationalities, you know, they do click together a bit more. But it's crazy, really, because they speak in English, yet they speak broken English. So it's actually pretty amazing how well people can communicate when obviously English isn't the first language and they don't speak each other's languages as well. But that is obviously, there's a range of issues there with people. So they could be more alcohol dependent and there could be drug dependency. So, you know, there's a whole range of issues that staff need to be, you know, really aware of.
Katie, the house you work in couldn't be more different, could it?
No, it's very different. One thing that's actually similar is, like you say, a sense of community. Some of the clients really kind of come together, but they do sometimes branch off into their own little groups and then not mix with other cultures. So what we try to do to help with this is we've got a group called United Sisters. And in that, they do lots of things like craft. They do well-being games. And we have a creche, so the babies aren't in the group. So the mums can just sort of really enjoy the session and fully engage with it without any disruptions. So it's really good for the children to have some time away from mum and for obviously the mums to have time away from the babies because they haven't got their families for support. You know, like you or I would be able to drop our children off to the grandparents. They can't do this. At one stage, we did have a lot more Albanian women, but nowadays we have more African girls, and culturally they're very different, so we've got a lot of vibrant characters at the moment, which is lovely. Great sense of humour, full of fun, very noisy, and we've had a few arguments during COVID. Obviously they've had a lot of delays with their home office interviews and everyone's just become a little bit fed up because they want to move on. So there has been a few more arguments in the house because they've been with us for such a great length of time and they wouldn't normally be. Some have had ladies here for like a year and a half now, and you know, they're just so ready. They've gained their independence. They want to move on. So we're just sort of supporting them, keeping them busy, keeping them distracted until they can actually move on.
How long would you expect clients to stay with you?
It's meant to be a 45-day turnaround. So 45 days for them to get the conclusive grounds decision. However, I've never known that actually happened, and I've worked here 3 years now. So we've got people that can maybe move on slightly earlier, but it also depends on if they're on their asylum, on their immigration status. But I just want to add, we also find that when we've had clients be here for quite a long time, they struggle to move on. One of my clients who I'd spoken with the other day, he actually got upset when we were speaking about his move on because he said he wanted to stay here forever. And I explained that it's only temporary accommodation, but he was really upset with me. He's only 19, so he was quite unhappy with me, and he's not really, didn't really speak to me last week because of after the conversation.
Prior to COVID, I would have said girls are here between sort of 6 months and a year, but now we've got girls that have been here sort of a year and a half, coming on to 2 years. And it's really tough for them because they've prepared their statement with their solicitor. They've done been to all their home office interviews and, you know, they've done all of everything they need to do and they're ready. And we really do feel their frustrations. Sometimes it can affect the relationship that we have with them because they can become quite impatient with us and they think there's something that we can do to make it quicker. But yeah, it's a long time now. And I think COVID's really had an effect.
And I know all your clients are individuals, but do they have anything in common? Is there a typical victim of modern slavery?
I wouldn't say there's a typical victim of modern slavery, but however, a lot of our males have possible things in common that have happened to them in their trafficking. So for instance, our males, they've worked possibly in construction, or we've had some domestic servitude. Car washes is obviously such a big one, but our similarities seem to be that a lot of them come with dependency issues only because they've been provided this as a type of payment from the traffickers. Majority of them have the same sense when they arrive and they are withdrawn. They have a big distrust in the police. So I do think some of the traits are similar, but everyone's got their own story and everyone's so different culturally as well. Like we do have someone at the minute who is British. And a lot of people can't believe that there might be a British person seen as a potential victim. But we seem to be seeing more British males coming through.
I've been told when I visited a male house that some of the males have different issues from the female victims. They have issues about self-respect and guilt, shame. Is that the kind of thing that you found?
Yeah, I had a client actually quite recently. He was young, he was only 20, and he hadn't told his parents that he was a victim of trafficking, hadn't told them he was living in a safe house. So we had this huge police investigation going on, but his family basically still thought he was working. And I think they just thought he wasn't sending money home and was spending the money, when absolutely obviously wasn't the case. He was never getting paid in the first place. But it is a general thing, I think, possibly the cultural issues and the fact that they've come to the UK to try and provide a better future for their partners and their families back in their home country. And they can't do that. And they feel shame when they shouldn't feel that at all. They've been through something horrendous.
And Katie, the characteristics of the female victims when they arrive, lots of them will be first-time mums, won't they, and have a particular learning curve to master.
Yeah, of course. So obviously parenting doesn't come naturally to all, and we've had a few struggles. So sometimes we had mums that culturally in their country, you know, they can hit their children. And obviously over here, that's not something that's acceptable. So we've had girls that have needed social services involvement. We work very closely with the health visiting team and our local GP. So we have good connections with them. And also, yeah, culturally, mums are very different. So we've got the African girls that strap their babies to the back with a scarf. And then we have Albanian mums tend to really swaddle their babies, and they never want to put them down and let them toddle about. And it's just very different styles of parenting. And, you know, we allow them to parent as much as we can freely, but obviously we have to intervene if there's a safeguarding issue.
And you've had some quite dramatic arrivals, haven't you?
We have. I mean, we have had babies born here. I've been fortunate enough to be a labour partner twice in the 6 years that I've worked for the organisation. So, you know, it's very rewarding, and it's very, you know, it's an amazing role, because you do get to see the little babies grow up as well, and support, say, mum might need help with bathing baby the first time. So, yeah, it's really great.
Can you explain what you do day to day?
First of all, start by saying no 2 days are the same. Each day is quite different. But for us, I'd say if I was to come on shift, I would first of all be looking in our diary, looking what appointments we've got for the day, and we decide who'd be going where. So you might have a solicitor appointment, there might be an optician's appointment, there could be a bank appointment. We also could have a journey plan review. That's a meeting that the caseworker would have with the client, and we have to do these every month under our contracts. We then could range from calling the solicitors, the liaising with the police, and also, if there was an incident in the house, your whole plan day would go out the window, because we'd have to deal with what's obviously come up that day.
What sort of incidents?
They range. We can have some incidents that could be alcohol or drug related, arguments between clients, aggression. We did have a client, well, an ex-client now, he trashed his bedroom. So that obviously was not great. Most things are calm, but as soon as one incident starts, it seems to be a few things happening that week. But usually it's fine.
And Katie, if you had to describe a day in the life of a senior caseworker, how would you describe it?
Yeah, very similar to Hannah. It's very, very busy, very fast paced environment. You never know what you're going to be walking into. You can have a plan for your day. You know, I'd always use a notebook and a pad and write down the things I need to do. And it seems to be that you never get on top of your job, because there's just so much to do. And, you know, the girls could knock at the door, and like you were saying about incidents, there might be an argument and we end up having to diffuse the situation and mediate between two girls. Or it could be that suddenly a lady's gone into labour, or it could be somebody's having an anxiety attack and we need to support, call an ambulance. We've had lots of different things happening. But I like it. You know, I've never been bored in this job, because you never will get 2 days the same.
How do they change from the moment they come in, when they're quite shattered people, to when they actually leave the safe house, leave the refuge? What happens to them?
I think they certainly improve with confidence. That's one of the key things that we see. And, you know, they find their own sense of style. They go out shopping, buy their own clothes, you know, and they have their own identity. Some of them colour their hair or have a haircut. You know, maybe they wouldn't have done that before. They've not had the confidence to do that before. One thing that is really lovely to see is that, you know, they're all just absolutely wonderful mums, and their children come first. But they certainly, yeah, they grow so much in the time that they're here. You know, from the moment they come, when they're not able to book their own doctor's appointments and things, we've empowered them over time to slowly start doing everything themselves. And then they're ready to go out on their journey and kind of do it all alone. And it's lovely when they leave and you get a call and they'll say, oh, I'm settled, I'm doing really well, my child's in school. And we sometimes hear of these things that somebody's moved on to better things and we were a part of that. It's really rewarding.
Absolutely. I can second that as well. It's building their own, you know, their self-worth and their independence and their confidence, building all that up. Because obviously it has been completely shattered and it's not something that's a quick change. It takes time. And I think that's what people forget, that they need to deal with that what's happened, process it, and baby steps moving forward to have that better, that hopefully better life and better future for them and for the families.
How about the demand for places? It's 12 years since MedEye started. Is demand in any way diminishing?
I've been here 6 years and the numbers of women that are coming through the door is not any less. It's certainly not going away. And it's not something we hear publicised on the news every day. So not everybody's fully aware that this is still going on. But it very much is. A lot of the time we do have a full house. We do have 6 spaces at the moment. So, you know, those spaces will be full by Christmas. Trafficking tends to be worse in the winter. We're always really full in the winter. And it goes get a bit of a lull in the summer. It goes a bit quiet.
So I suppose the best and worst moment must be saying goodbye, because you're going to miss them. But on the other hand, you've helped them to rediscover their independence. What's that like?
To be honest with you, I think we remain very boundaried. Like, obviously, we do wish them well when they leave. We do give them a hug, you know, on the day. And we help them support them to put their bags in the car. But I don't stand there in floods of tears, because I feel like it's a good thing that they're going and they're ready to go. And, you know, it's a happy day when they leave and everybody's out there waving off. Some of the clients do get very emotional because they make friends, don't they? So they're like family to them, some of their friends. But it's always a positive thing that they're moving on, and I don't get too attached in the sense where I miss them, because I'm just there for the next person to come in. And I think we're all very professional here. We give them a really like caring approach, but actually we have to allow them to move on.
I can completely agree with that as well. And I do think it is obviously that bed space then is empty and it's for someone else who really is in such a critical situation and they need the support and they need that accommodation. So I do think it is a great day when someone moves on, because it's a great day for them. They can put this possibly behind them and just focus on them moving forward for the future. But essentially we've then got a space that another person needs as soon as possible, and we can start the process all over again.
Hannah and Katie, thank you so much for doing a fantastic job and for turning victims into survivors. Thanks too to our writer Alison Porter and singer Rona Castriotti. Do join us next week to hear about the lives which the trafficked girls leave behind in Albania and the efforts that are being made to stop them from being tricked into leaving their country in the first place. If you'd like more information about MedEye or about how you personally can spot the signs of modern slavery, please visit our website, www.medeye-trust.org.uk. And thank you for listening.